Welcome to the Ideal Investor Show. This is the podcast where we help you challenge your mindset and discover where you are. Tired of stories about other people's success? We can help you change your life, determine your time freedom point, and join us on the journey to financial success. Let's go. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Ideal Investor Show, where we bring you interesting guests who can either help you to develop income streams, cash flow, other investments, or just really good information if you want to make some changes in your life. And we do that today with a special guest. Patrick Elsner is with us. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Axel. I look forward to talking to you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for making the time. So as with all our shows, let our audience know a little bit. How did Patrick to get to where you are right now?
So I became a franchise consultant about 21 years ago. I actually started looking at franchises and businesses to own. I was tired of working in corporate America, so I started looking at franchises. Ended up working with a franchise consultant that does exactly what I do. I took over his practice. He's since retired, and here I am 21 years later.
Okay. Yeah, that's very good. And you said you got tired of corporate America, or like working in corporate America. Can you describe a little more what were the things, or in addition, what do you see with clients that come to you? What are the things nowadays that they use as a trigger or as a starting point to say, I want to do something different?
I'll give you a very specific example, which is really a turning point for me in working in corporate America. I was a corporate guy. I was a very loyal employee, diligent, hard worker, high performer. And I was selling television advertising for the local NBC affiliate here in St. Louis. And midway through the year, this was July 1995. I'll never forget it. Wow. Because it was the day after the 4th of July, very timely. But I was called into my sales manager's office and he said, Patrick, we're going to take away this, and this account from you. And I said, well, why is it? Am I being punished? Have I done something wrong? They said, no, you're actually a victim of your success. We're taking these accounts away from you because we think you're making too much money. Mm. Now, I don't know about you, Axel, but when you're on straight commission, aren't you supposed to make as much money as you can for the company and yourself? It didn't work that way. It's a really odd corporate philosophy. So I knew at that moment, my days in corporate America were numbered.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that's hopefully a pretty drastic example. Although I've heard, especially in the marketing and sales area, that, you know, districts are redistricted or changed, or parts of roles are being separated. You know, somebody suddenly becomes the email person separate from the person who used to write the emails and then follow up and all that kind of stuff. So, now, this, in the way it sounds to me, and tell me if I understand this correctly, it's not just a matter of somebody making a procedural change or a change in your job description, but I would assume it also has a significant impact on the money that you actually bring out of the activities at the end of the month. Is that true?
No question about it. Look, you know, Axel, there's a book by a guy named Harry Beckwith. The book is called Selling the Invisible. And I'm just going to paraphrase what he says. He says, look, the only way to survive and thrive and persevere in corporate America is go back to eighth grade. It's a popularity contest. We've all heard that term, managing up. That's what this is. I mean, if you could be a high performer, a diligent, great employee, but if your boss doesn't like you, it's curtains, man. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I also have to say, when that happens, there are different options, obviously. It happened once to me. I don't want to go too much into the story. Our audience has heard it several times. But I was basically part of a mutiny in corporate America because we were working for a company that was basically living off government funding for the military, because the government, obviously, and I think it's a good idea, has an interest for small startup companies to come up with some cool stuff that the military can use. And oftentimes doing anything in the government realm takes initially a bunch of money. But the idea, obviously, is that you transition from that dependency into some kind of a level of self-sufficiency. And they don't let you do this forever. They say, okay, well, you have 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and then we want to see that you're really transitioning. Or like what I did, I basically started my own business. And I guess, and here's the bridge, say, well, instead of building my own thing, which obviously not that easy and doesn't happen overnight, maybe I can jump into something that already exists. So if you were, if somebody, let's pretend, were in that situation, like it doesn't have to be a mutiny, they just decide they don't want to do it anymore. And they were to say, okay, I listened to the Ideal Investor show. I heard Patrick, sounds interesting. How would it go from there?
Yeah. Every day, Axel, I talk to guys in corporate America and gals, and they basically give me the same story. Tired of working in corporate America. I don't like my boss. My boss doesn't like me. Or you think about companies like Wells Fargo, who years ago when they were caught screwing around with not only customers' accounts, but then they turn around and blame the employees. Yeah. Now, how is that fair that me as an innocent employee working dutifully for Wells Fargo turns around and gets screwed by the company? So I can, only thing I can do, Axel, is give people alternatives through franchise ownership. And that's what I've done successfully for the last 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I meant is a little more, let's just say somebody is making somewhere between 150 and 200 a year, and they say, okay, I had it, but I'm not just going to do a clear cut. I want to have a transition. I know there's a guy like Patrick out there. How would that transition look like, and what kind of opportunities would you be able to offer them?
Yeah, there's two paths for franchise ownership typically, Axel. You can keep your job in corporate America and do something on the side. A great franchise industry and some specific brands that allow you to do that is the hair salon industry. We think about name brands like Supercuts and Gray Clips and Sport Clips and Fantastic Sam's. We would not work in these stores day to day, but we could certainly begin to own them and build an empire. And then eventually, if they're making enough money, you can leave your job in corporate America, or you can own your 10 Gray Clips and keep your job. It's really up to you. So that's a pretty typical path for most people.
Yeah, and I asked that part because I can imagine if somebody listens to us and says, yeah, I completely sympathize with what you're saying about the situation that I'm finding myself in. And every so often I have that frustration. But if you're in, let's say, the 150 to 200K a year area, probably don't want to say, okay, in 3 months I go to zero, or at least have to be prepared to be at zero. Now, so you said the one thing is you can do parallel. What's the other one? Is that the cold turkey one, or what do you call that?
Yeah, that'd be the cold turkey one. That's where you're making a complete breakaway. And sometimes people will do it voluntarily or involuntarily. Right. Sometimes people are laid off. I just placed a guy from Cisco in Philadelphia who got laid off. He was 53, I guess. And he wasn't going back to corporate America anymore, Axel. And so we placed him in a franchise that's all hands on deck, full-time day one. And he's thrilled.
Okay, understood. And so to basically get good at the activity of a franchise owner, what's your recommendation? How much kind of in the bank or in reserves should somebody have to not be dependent from day one on the franchise?
You definitely want to have probably almost a year's worth of living expenses in the bank, because any business from startup, from zero, is going to take you a while to begin to cash flow positive. So if you're staying in your job in corporate America, that's kind of a moot point. But if you're making a complete breakaway, you want to have at least a year's worth of living expenses covered.
And so is it, if somebody actually invests in a franchise, is it really from zero, or is typically the franchise set up in a way that there's an expectation of cash flow already?
No, if you're doing a pure franchise startup, you're looking at starting it from ground zero. So let's say you're going to open up a Gray Clips. It might take you upwards to a year to actually open, because you've got to go through site selection, lease negotiation, and build out, hiring the employees, getting the grand opening. And then, you know, obviously it's going to take a while for customers to realize there's a new Gray Clips there.
So is there any kind of scenario where you can actually get into an existing franchise? I don't mean like the brand existing, but the business, so to speak, existing and running.
Yeah, I just placed a gentleman in Raleigh, North Carolina, that purchased an existing franchise from an owner who's retiring.
Right.
The challenge is there aren't a lot of great existing franchises or even businesses on the open market. If I'm a business owner, whether I'm a franchise owner or an independent, and I've got a really good business, the likelihood of me putting it on the open market is really slim to none.
Understood. And so if you go back to this person that you mentioned that would want to get into the hairstyling business, I'm assuming building that business, finding that location, all those kind of things, probably signing lease agreement, equipping it and stuff. How much would somebody have to kind of consider from an investment perspective besides having like money in the bank? And I think, yeah, let's just go with like somebody really decides I'm sick and tired, like we started, I want to do this new thing. How much does it take maybe on average to actually get started as an investment?
Yeah. We'll just use Gray Clips, for example.
Okay.
All and everything you need to launch a Gray Clips, you're probably looking at $250,000 total investment. And you're either going to fund a portion of that through cash, more than likely an SBA loan or even a conventional loan, or you might even self-fund it. A lot of times people tap into retirement funds without taxes or penalties, or they use a home equity line of credit.
So in a scenario like that, would SBA or public lenders actually cover like what, 80%, 70, 90? How much do you get?
Yeah, typically you're going to look at maybe a 20% cash infusion, and then 80% on the balance would be an SBA loan.
Okay, so basically $50,000, kind of in that ballpark, between 50 and 100, I would guess, right?
Sure.
Because, I mean, they're probably not all 250. There might also be more, right?
Could be more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to tease out a little bit of the numbers because I think it's important to make somebody who says, yeah, finally somebody on Axel's show that actually can give me a way out of the frustration.
Sure. Say,
okay, my advice would be, and I say this for all our investors anyway, or anybody in the audience, you should have at least 6 months anyway. Right. Now, if you don't have it and you're in the process of investing, you can use the cash flow out of the investments to build those 6 months while you're still working. But if you say, okay, I now want to have a time horizon, then I would say it makes sense to say, okay, first look at what's your cushion time-wise, and then, you know, how much can you bring to the table to actually invest in a franchise. Now, you mentioned that the better way, because it's rare that somebody would sell something that is working well. So like stay with our hair salon idea. In a way, what's your experience, or what do you tell your clients how long it takes to basically be able to replace what they used to have in their regular job?
In terms of replacing their actual income, it's going to depend upon what their income is. And then, you know, every store is going to throw off X amount. It's just going to vary on maturity of the store, how well the store is run, obviously the location. There's a myriad of factors that are involved. But I always tell people, start with the end in mind and then back into what you want to try to accomplish.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at it a little bit from a leadership perspective as somebody who runs two businesses. The success of the business is obviously to quite a bit extent dependent on the people that you have in your business and how much are you able to lead them. Because one thing, and this might go a little bit off track from what we were talking about, but I have quite a few people over the years that became coaching and mentoring clients in our investing side. But I really subscribe to a holistic approach. You can't just say, I only talk business. I don't want to tell you anything about me as a person. It kind of belongs together. And what I found is that it's one thing to say, I'm frustrated, like you said, frustrated with corporate America. But when you turn around and say, okay, how would you lead if you had the power? It is not uncommon, let's put it that way, that people know what they don't like, but they don't necessarily automatically know how to do it better, especially consistently and sustainably. Because if I go to your hair salon and you have the seats and whatever model you use on, are they employees or are they basically working on their own dime or commission or whatever? But there's still people that need leadership, that need systems. And I know, at least I assume I know, the franchise gives you somewhat of a frame, but ultimately it's interpersonal relationships that have to be developed. So kind of curious to what extent somebody who says, okay, I'm working with Patrick, he helps me to find the right kind of business that I can associate with. How do they learn to become basically a business owner?
Well, you've heard that expression when it comes to investing, Axel, that past performance is not indicative of future results, right?
Yes, every banker.
In my opinion, with people, it's the opposite. If you've had a successful career in corporate America, you have a high likelihood of being successful as a business owner. Now, the skill sets are going to be the key. The book, Now Discover Your Strengths, he talks about you can't teach a rabbit to swim, you can't teach a turtle to hop. You still have to be mindful of your skill sets. I'd be a terrible accountant. That's why I pay, you know, John Scott thousands of dollars every year to be my CPA. I don't want to do that. I know that's not something I'm good at. So you hire somebody to do the things you're not good at.
That totally makes sense. Based on your many years of experience, any industries where you would say coming out of that industry is a little more likely to be successful than others?
Sales and marketing people generally tend to be high performers, tend to do well, because I don't care if you own a Grey Clips or you own a Stanley Steamer, it doesn't really matter, but that sales and marketing piece is always going to be the key. You can find the operations people, the behind the scenes people, but you think about a restaurant, you don't want a grumpy, introverted individual as the maitre d' of your restaurant. You want someone who is outgoing and friendly and personable as your maitre d'. You can find the chefs, the cooks, because those skill sets aren't really applicable there.
I hear you, and that's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, I've done and still do quite a bit of work in larger corporations, especially the life science industry. And I would almost suspect in any industry that is highly regulated, where, you know, creative leadership or creative management is not forbidden, but it's almost impossible to do just because you constantly run into some kind of rule or regulation or some reporting requirement or whatever. So you become, in my terminology, I always say, whether you want it or not, you remain, even with your title getting better and better, you're still only really a manager. You never really get the opportunity to lead. And so I would assume if somebody never had the chance to lead, because there is something about inspiration and motivation and creativity and stuff, which I think marketing and sales, like you said, is exactly what's kind of almost required. Then to switch and say, now I'm a great leader because I was frustrated about the lack of leadership in my previous job, it's not that likely, I would assume.
Yeah. True. Yeah, you know, they always say the fish rots from the head. And so it's the same thing. Leadership stems from the top. Whether you own 20 supercuts or you're leading a team of salespeople at IBM as a W-2, it still comes down to the individual that is the symphony conductor.
Yeah, and that is perfect because I have used that example so many times, right? They don't need to be the number one fiddle or the number one in any of the instruments, but you need to have the ability to make them all play together to make a beautiful tune or sound for that matter. So yeah, absolutely. That's a great one. I think we are well aligned on what's the role that you really need to assume. So with those things in mind, and if somebody in our audience is thinking, maybe I should check this out, what are some of the things? Should they just get in touch with you, or what would you say is the best way to go forward if somebody says I'm intrigued?
Best thing to do would be to go to my website. It's a very simple URL. It's franinside.com. So franinside.com. That's my website. All my contact information's there. You can also look me up on LinkedIn. I've been doing this for 20 plus years. There's over 100 written testimonials of people I placed just in the last couple of years.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds very good. Now, you mentioned a couple of times that you're placing people. Is that a process that people then go through with you, or what does placing mean in a little bit more hands-on practical terms?
Yeah, placement means that I place someone into a franchise. Like I just placed an individual last week down in Florida who signed his franchise agreement. So the vernacular here in franchise development is a placement means someone who has joined a particular franchise.
And so is that, are they gonna get some sort of a training on how to run great clips or supercuts or something like, where do they, how do you learn if it's not the business that you've been doing all your life? You're basically doing it more in a sense as a business, but also as an investment. Is there like training involved or stuff like that to know what to look for? Or?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that happen before you actually join the franchise. In this particular instance, this gentleman in Florida, he actually spent the day with a franchise owner in a
Okay.
neighboring market. So not only did he get to see firsthand how it worked, but he actually got to talk to that owner throughout the day. He got to see sort of the life cycle of the business day. And that was a huge experience. Now that he's signed his franchise agreement and will be launching sometime this fall, he's going to be provided 2 weeks of training, then 2 weeks of in-person training, and then post-training, another 90 days. So the training's extensive enough to give somebody enough of a fighting shot to be successful.
Okay, that's really cool, and thanks for sharing that. Last part on that would be, is there such a thing like the community of franchise owners in the hairdressing community or something where, you know, you have a chance to share? I mean, I understand that to some extent they could be competitors, but is there some kind of like tribe of hairdressers or something?
Yeah, in great clips, and I don't know the exact number here, Axel, but I'm just going to say there's probably 800 individual franchise owners that you have a collective brother and sisterhood that you'll be able to talk to them about best practices. I'm in St. Louis, but if I owned a couple of great clips and I was challenged, maybe I could call the owners in Chicago or Kansas City or Des Moines, Iowa, and ask them, hey, here's what's going on in St. Louis with my great clips. Do you got any recommendations? So being able to have that collegial sort of approach to business ownership through franchising is a huge advantage. If I just own an individual, say, engineering firm, I'm really an island out there on my own. But because I'm part of a franchise system, I've got other owners that I can bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, that's beautiful to hear. That's actually one of the things that I really like about the real estate and real estate investing industry is, you know, there's so many properties and there's so many lenders and so many insurance people and so many property managers and all that. So the community of those who help others and themselves into the investment side of it, I would say is probably one of the nicest, friendliest communities. And I mean, anytime somebody says, okay, I take the leap and want to join basically that profession, so to speak. I've never seen that anybody said, no, I'm not going to help you because you're just going to steal my customers or stuff like that. So that's, and I know that there are other communities or other, I should say, other business types, let's call it, where that's not necessarily the norm, but, you know, glad to hear that in franchising and obviously in real estate, that's the case. It makes the whole thing, you know, if you run into something you've never seen, you can always ask 10 people, have you ever seen that? And 99 out of 100 times, somebody in the community has seen something at least similar already. You know, so
Exactly.
yeah, very cool. Okay, cool. I think we gave a little insight or a little glimpse into what is out there and the opportunity to overcome that frustration that you started out telling us about. So I'm coming to the two questions at the end. And the first one is, if you could meet anybody, who would it be and why?
Yeah, I think I would like to be able to meet probably Robert Kennedy, either one of the Kennedys, because I think they were pivotal individuals in not only society but our government. So probably any of the Kennedys would be fascinating.
Yeah, JFK would be probably somebody I would like to meet, especially at a time after the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know,
Absolutely.
as I'm really still to this day fascinated about leadership and for somebody, I don't know if you ever looked into this, but I researched it a little bit and I found it really impressive how he realized what mistakes they made and really change it so that most likely those things don't happen again. And how do you do that, right? Like when you are really that much in the limelight would be interesting. Okay, cool. And then we talked before we started recording. So here's your chance about the time machine. Where would you go and why?
I'd probably go back to my college years, I really wanted to be a broadcaster. I always say I wanted to be Tom Brokaw. Sadly, what happened, Axel, is the fear really got to me because one of the individuals, one of my adjunct instructors said, you know, this is really about going into a small town and working your way up. And I'm kind of a homebody. I'm a Cancer. That's my sign of the zodiac. So the idea of leaving St. Louis and having to go to Poughkeepsie and to start out really was a huge turnoff for me. And I look back now and I think, okay, I've had so much success in business. I just wonder how much successful I would have been as a broadcast journalist.
Yeah, that would be fascinating to see. I can tell you from now a career of more than 40 years of being sent around quite a bit, initially first 20 years to the military and then by our own decision. Human beings, I would include myself, are much more able to adjust than we give ourselves credit. So I'm pretty sure you could be Patrick Brokaw or something like that.
It's got a nice ring to it. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, so one more time, how do we get people in touch with you, Patrick?
Yeah, best is the website, www.franinside.com. And there's a contact page. You can reach me again, LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Okay, very cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and making the time. And hopefully we can maybe do it again in the future.
Yeah, thanks, Axel.